Welcome to The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Nadeau. Hope you're all having a great week, another sit down. We got a great episode planned for you today, and we've got big news. Blackjack Fletcher is back. We haven't heard from Blackjack in a while. It's good to have him back. He's been busy. He's been catching up on work and doing all sorts of things. And, he's got a couple of new shows. Blackjack, what's up? Good to have you back. How's it going, brother?
It's great to be back, Jeff, here in the sit down. It's always fun to come and do this show. Yeah, man, I've been running around with betterthanvegas.com. You know, we've got a lot of stuff going on with the NBA and NHL playoffs going on. And, you know, as you said, we started a new Thursday baseball show with Jonathan Papelbon.
Former high-end closer.
Yeah, man. Yeah, Pap's been really interesting. He's got a lot of strong opinions, I'll say that.
Yeah, I've heard about that. And that's the kind of guys you want. I mean, those are the interesting people. And I know we have a lot of people in the Boston area. I'm sure they remember Papelbon. He was a closer here in Philadelphia for a few years. And I think you told me he's the all-time saves leader in Boston and Philadelphia history. So, let me ask you, you think he's an all-star or a Hall of Famer?
You know, Jeff, I think closers get a kind of a hard path to the Hall of Fame. And I don't really understand why. I mean, I think that Jonathan Papelbon, was he a Mariano Rivera or a Trevor Hoffman? No, but he's right there after that. Like, the guy won a World Series in Boston. He's the all-time saves leader in two franchises that have been around for a long time. And I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer, but I think he's close. And I think that, you know, the amount of votes he got really isn't reflective of that.
Yeah, keep in mind, only eight closers in the Hall of Fame. Hoyt Wilhelm, Bruce Sutter, Lee Smith, Mariano Rivera, Trevor Hoffman, Goose Gossage, Raleigh Fingers, Dennis Eckersley. So, yeah, you're not going to have a lot of closers there. Now, when we look at Papelbon's numbers, 368 saves, 808 strikeouts, a 2.4 ERA. When we look at Hoffman, over 1,100 strikeouts and 601 saves. Similar all-star game appearances. You know, we obviously have a World Series for Papelbon and not Hoffman. We'll see. Maybe down the road, but as you said, it's not easy for closers to get in the Hall of Fame. But Blackjack, it's good to have you back. Glad you're working on some good things. And we urge you guys, you know, a lot of people know, and Blackjack and I have been friends for a while. We go and are in the sports betting business. If that's something that interests you, go check out what Blackjack's doing, Better Than Vegas. A lot of good stuff over there. A lot of good content coming out on a regular basis. But Blackjack, are you happy to be back on this show? I've missed you. I can do shows on my own, but it's better to have someone here to chat with.
Yeah, man. I'm thrilled to be back. I love this show.
Good. Yeah, so we got a lot to talk about today. We're going to talk about some news. It's been a couple of bad weeks in a row for the Genovese crime family. They've had a couple of guys get jammed up recently. And it really just goes to show us that the federal government still cares a lot about the mob. They just do. While there are a lot of other things going on right now, the feds still care a lot about it. We're going to get into that. We're also going to talk a little bit about some other things. And we're going to talk this week about a guy that, you know, I get asked all the time, who's one of the most underrated people? Who are the underrated people in the mob? And I think our subject today never will get the kind of fanfare that people like Anthony Casso and Tony Ducks Corallo got in the Lucchese crime family. But for a family that struggled at times to have leaders, our subject today, Neil Migliore, is often forgotten. He's a fascinating guy, came up, you know, in the 40s and 50s and learned under Tommy Lucchese, kind of like Tony Ducks did. And he ultimately found himself making a lot of money. And Blackjack, I've said before, you know, we often hear, you know, whether it's Lucchese's or Gambino's, whoever, about the big boys, you know, the John Gotti's, the Tommy Lucchese's, the Anthony Casso's. But we have to realize that the guys that keep these families running, the wheels that turn them, are guys like Neil Migliore, guys that can maintain high-end positions, make a lot of money, not really see the back of a jail cell. They're the guys that have allowed these families to run this country for a long time. So I'm glad we're able to talk about people like him.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, listen, it's easy to talk about, you know, the big name guys that everyone knows, but guys like this are really what makes the machine run. You know, they're the grease in the engine. So, you know, it's good to give them a little bit of shine too.
Exactly. But before we get into, you know, kind of what we're here for with the biography, it's important that we still talk about news because there's still a lot of news going on in the mob. The last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of news. I want to first touch on some news coming out of the rat camp, if you will. And look, I don't like to give these guys a lot of you know, kind of credit or anything. But I want to talk about Frank Pasqua, who a lot of people know. Frankie Pasqua was a Lucchese family associate. He was very involved. We talked about Frank a little bit in our Stephen Crea episode. He was integral in being one of the informants that put Stephen Crea away and, you know, may end up being someone that will give Stephen Crea a new trial. But Frank Pasqua Blackjack was basically given carte blanche to get out of prison, serve some time, 33-month sentence, and get out, even though he was involved with murder, kidnapping, and drug dealing. But due to his cooperation, he's out and living a life. I do want to discuss, though, he was actually arrested on April 12th after it was alleged that he got into an argument with his son. An incident took place where Frank Pasqua grabbed his son, squeezed his neck while pushing his body into a motor vehicle, giving him physical injuries, substantial pain and bruising to the neck. He also texted the son saying, quote, "Froggy, like you want to take a shot at me? Because I'll let you punch me a good 3 or 4 times before I backhand you in the next week. I'll never close my hands and hit my son, but you bet when I slap you, it'll feel like you got punched. You're nothing to me. You'll never be anything to me for turning." That's what his son said to him. Then the son called him a rat, which is what he is. I think his son is not happy with his behavior. I think his son's kind of disgusted of his behavior. And I guess dad got one too much. Look, Blackjack, I'm all in favor of supporting your father. I'm all in favor of making sure you treat your father with respect. You shouldn't share your father dishonor. But at the end of the day, Frank Pasqua has become an annoyance. His behavior is pathetic on the streets, the way he acts. And I think he's kind of having to deal with some of the things that he laid out due to his behavior. And his sons are reading the papers now. They know who he is. And, you know, this is also the same guy that boasted about, you know, the kind of guy he was in an interview recently. He said, quote, "I love being important, being the center of attention, being the guy that everyone knows not to fuck with." You know, when you say stuff like that as an informant, it's not great. And the son kind of got sick of it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it makes sense, right? I mean, as you said, Jeff, you know, we've talked about it over and over on the show. The father-son relationship is a complicated one. But, you know, when you've done the things that he's done, at some point, you know, your son grows up to be a man and has to live his own life and make his own decisions. And it's hard to look at his father and not see and see anything other than what he is, which is a rat and somebody who is really a very dishonorable human being.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, we've talked about this before, but, you know, it's kind of the question of, well, what do you want these people to do? And it's like, well, look, I don't really hate him for what he did, but it's just like his constant, like, trying to put himself into, you know, current stuff, you know, constantly wanting to be on YouTube and doing all this stuff, just kind of go on with your life and move on. But he's now going to go to prison. You know, this isn't the first time he's had some run-ins with his family. Court records show that he served 3 years in prison for assaulting his wife with a broken bottle and a slew of other crimes. In 2016, he was jailed under assumed name after he was arrested for selling heroin to inmates that he used his drug-addled ex-wife to smuggle into prison. You have to ask yourself, Blackjack, and look, last week I had John Gleason on this show. I touched on the question a little bit, but the question has to be asked to some of these folks that do deals with these people. Is there a credit check at all with these people? Are they allowed to just commit crimes and it's kind of forgiven because of some of their cooperation? You know, some of this behavior is out of control, and I'm just not sure we should be doing deals with these kind of people, but you know, Frank Pasqua should go to jail and he should pay for his crimes. And we're seeing it now with Gene Borello. Gene was sued recently by a very famous family. Some of these folks, we have to remember they're gangsters at the end of the day. And just because you give them a deal doesn't mean they're not gangsters anymore. They're still going to commit crimes. And that's just how it goes. But kind of a sickening story. Frank Pasqua's going to go to prison and, you know, he should. Now his son is an adult, but at the end of the day, I don't know what kind of, I don't know what would present you to want to say some of that stuff to your son. I don't know, kind of a shame.
Rough to hear.
Yeah, exactly. A couple of piece of news coming out of the Genovese camp. Late last month, four members of the family and two associates were jammed up on racketeering. And this continues to send home the message that, according to Letitia James in the state attorney's office, she would say for years, members of the family have terrorized New York communities with violence and illegal business. These individuals allegedly made their money through illegal gambling and loan sharking, which it's interesting because most states that is legal now in. She would say that they saddle victims with incredible debt that they cannot repay. Well, remember, Letitia, they all have come to the mob for help. So listen, Blackjack, let me ask you, if you borrow money from someone, do you find it, obviously it's a crime if you assault them for not paying, but don't you feel they should get a bit of a slap if they don't pay? That's kind of a scummy move to get money and then not pay it back, isn't it?
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, you know, listen, I always say these things, like if you get involved with a loan shark and you don't pay them and they come and, you know, bust your knees up, I don't have a problem with that. Like, don't do business with a loan shark.
Yeah, right, right. I mean, remember, they were there when you needed them. Now, the interesting thing is one of the people involved is a higher up, Rafi Balsamo. They call him the Undertaker. He has a crew up in the Bronx, gets his nickname the Undertaker because of his stature in the funeral home business. His family is big up in the Bronx and funeral homes up in Westchester County. And actually, due to his behavior in certain indictments, he's actually been removed by the state board in the funeral business. So he can no longer participate in that. He's been in jail a lot, really, since the early 2000s. You know, and he's going to go back to prison. He faces up to 20 years on these charges. He did a lot of time for drug dealing, big drug dealer, selling guns, fraud, all sorts of things. So he's going to have a pretty big problem here coming up. Another individual, Nick Khaleesi, he was a capo that actually did some stuff down in Florida. He had set up a little crew down there. He was also arrested. So they have some issues. They also, there was news coming out last week that a capo in their Queens family, a guy that runs out of Corona, Queens, Anthony Romanello, he's in his 80s, Blackjack. He was arrested after he was called upon by an Albanian associate to rough up a restaurant owner who owed the Albanian guy, Luan Bekshidi, money. So I guess Bekshidi calls Romanello and a soldier, Joe Celso, and says, hey, this restaurant owner is not paying his money. Now, it's interesting, Blackjack, because the owner that he assaulted, an individual, Bruno Salamai, he's a big-time restaurateur in Manhattan, Albanian guy also. He has a steakhouse called Club A on 58th Street, very nice place. I guess this individual borrowed money from Bekshidi, didn't pay it back, and the guy got sick of it and called upon Romanello to take care of some business. And I guess, according to the indictment, Salamai's in his restaurant. This old guy comes in, slaps him around a little bit. He reports the assault to police, but then 2 days later withdraws it. And I guess all of a sudden the federal government picked it up, get some popcorn headlines out of this. Blackjack, if these are not mob guys, does this ever make the paper?
Zero chance. It does one further. If these aren't mob guys, they don't even investigate it.
No, it's so funny. And look, I think it's important because like we'll get people that'll call. I'll get people that'll contact me, be like, you're always sticking up for mob guys. It's like, well, no, I mean, I don't know. I just think a lot of this stuff should not be like.
I don't like hypocrisy, okay? And that's what the government's doing here, all right? Jeff, if you give me a loan at 30 points, okay, that's illegal. And if you don't pay me, if I don't pay you back and you come over and you knock me around a little bit and I go to the cops, you know what they're doing? They're taking a report and putting it on a desk. The federal government is not getting involved.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing. It's like, you know, we've seen it in all sorts of different areas, you know. It's definitely pretty much common knowledge that mob stuff plays and people like to read about it. You know, listen, would I ever, you know, I don't really lend people money, but, you know, if I did and they didn't pay me for like months on end, I would, I don't know if I would go and assault them, but like it would bother me. You know, I don't know. And I also know if I did it, it probably wouldn't show up in the paper either. So
no way.
This mob stuff's big. But yeah, bad couple of weeks for the Genovese crime family. Bad week for Frankie Pasqua. Let me ask you about do you know, like, if you're a cooperator and you behave poorly, you know, what do you think this will look like for him?
I mean, I still think he's going to get a benefit from it, right? Like, he's not going to do his full, the full bid that he normally would have. But, you know, there is a very implicit agreement there when you enter into that, that cooperation agreement that you have to do your part. And if you don't, it is not going to be looked at fondly. So, you know, I think that he's going to get whacked here. He's going to get whacked pretty good because, again, at the end of the day, the government isn't crying over sending this guy to prison either. So, you know, I think that you had your shot and you screwed it up.
Yeah, this guy should be on his best behavior, and he is not on his best behavior. Blackjack, before we get to the subject this week, I wanted to kind of connect something going on in our world, if a little bit in our world right now, back to the mafia. And let me ask you a question. If you're in the mafia and you mess with a made man or counterpart's wife, what happens to you?
Nothing good, brother. You're going to get taken out.
Right. You're going to get whacked. Now, unless you're John Gotti, because in his case, he did it and nothing happened. The guy that did it was a soldier and just didn't do anything about it, because what are you going to really do? But it is a complete no-no. In fact, it is a killing of is an offense that can get you killed, quite frankly. And I want to kind of relate this to something going on. So as many of you guys know, Blackjack and I used to work at a company called Barstool Sports. Neither of us worked there anymore. And it's by this point become a really high-end media company, and there's a lot going on. And there are tons of people that work there. There's an office that they have in Midtown Manhattan. And, you know, it's almost like a big floor, and there's just tons of people that work there. And there's storylines that became created and all sorts of things go on. So there's an individual that works there, Hank. And, you know, Blackjack and I both know him. We've had run-ins with him. I've had run-ins with him. He's a producer, high-end guy. He's been there forever. According to Barstool people like Portnoy and Big Cat, he's a made man there. He can't do anything wrong. He's very connected. He's what we would call in our world, Blackjack. He would be your soldier, very, very strong soldier. Your kind of protege, if you will, a very dependable individual, driver. Drivers always end up doing well in the mob. That's what he is. And he had a girlfriend for a long time, Rhea. They dated for like 4 years. Hank wants to like take it to the next level. Rhea decides she's a lot younger than him. She wants to get single, and she goes and becomes single. They break up. That happened about a year ago. And quite recently, Blackjack, we found out that one of our old counterparts, Marty Mush, who we both worked with pretty closely, he's decided to take on a relationship with Miss Rhea. Now, as you and I both know, probably not a good idea due to the fact that, you know, it's just something you probably don't want to do if you work with people, especially with, you know, exes that work in the same office as you. And the crazy thing was, he didn't tell anyone about this for a long period of time. Well, as we now know, everyone has a smartphone, and a lot of people know who these folks are now. Someone snapped a picture, and World War III has ensued. So I'll ask you this, Blackjack. I'm trying to think about this, and I want to get your opinion on this. I know some of our listeners may not know what we're talking about, but I felt like I've explained it pretty well. Can you think of any mobsters that I'm trying to think of ones that were killed over something like this? Doesn't happen much, but what are your thoughts on all this? Kind of crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just speak generally to the issue and not the specific parties involved, but generally it's a really bad idea. It's not justifiable is the bottom line, right? Like, I don't care how close the two people are in question. You don't do that to somebody that you work with closely. You don't do it to someone that you're even tangentially friends with. You just don't do it. It's one of those like social norms, right? Like a guy who does that is just not a great guy. Like it's not somebody who is trustworthy. It's not somebody who I think has a lot of loyalty. It's not somebody who has a lot of sense.
Yeah. And kind of connecting this to the mob, I'm trying to think of some of the situations. I mean, I know of Gumadas that maybe got in the way a little bit too much. I actually know of Blackjack. If you know who I'm talking about, Rusty Restelli, he was the old boss of the Bonato crime family. I know for a fact, his wife, it's actually alleged that he killed his own wife after he decided he was going to go be, cheat on her, basically. And she found out about it. She threatened to go to the police about his crimes, and he allegedly whacked her. That's a little different in this scenario, but this doesn't happen very much in the mob world. I just know that if we're talking about from the center of like mob worlds and this kind of thing, you do this kind of thing, you're going to get two in the back of the head pretty quick. Yeah. Now, that's
again, there's a clear line, right? The reason it doesn't happen very often is because everybody knows what a line it is, right? You just don't do it. And there's the reality is this, there's no reason to do it. There's plenty of people in the world. All right. You don't need that one. Go find someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think it's one of those things you just don't kind of delve into. That's kind of my thought, but kind of an interesting situation. I guess I'll ask the listeners, what would you do? It's not something I would do. I don't think anyone in the right mind would say I would do that. I mean, as you said, young guy, decent looking guy, make some money, just go out and find someone that doesn't work with you, especially one that dated a very close coworker to you. Not ideal, but all right, Blackjack, let's get into our subject for today, the Lucchese Crime Fund. We're going to talk a little bit about Neil Migliore, a very underrated individual in the mob. One person that really didn't do much jail time and had to survive a attempted hit late in his life. Let's get into it. Neil Migliore. On the sit down, Anelio Migliore was born October 2nd, 1933, in Queens, New York. And as a teen, he would actually come up under the tutelage of a capo regime in the family, Joe Narro's Larotro. Now, Larotro was very powerful in the 20s and 30s. Obviously, as we know, the mob doesn't take its five families hold until the early 30s. That's when the Reyna crime family gets pulled in basically down the road into the Lucchese crime family. But Larotro was a very powerful guy, not only in the Reyna family, but in the Lucchese family in Queens. He was a gigantic bookmaker, huge numbers guy. And look, really from the Prohibition times until the late 60s, early 70s, numbers was a huge moneymaker. We've talked about that with guys like Tony Salerno. There was a lot of money in numbers because remember, Blackjack, numbers were basically the lottery and everyone played them. Everyone wants to hit on something, and even housewives and everyone played the lottery. So for the mob, it was a huge business, and Larotro really excelled at that. As a teenager, Migliore really started to impress Larotro with his ability. He was a smart kid. He was savvy, was really good with numbers, and he was a good kid to have on the streets in the bookmaking duties. I kind of liken it to subject we talked about a couple of weeks ago, Vinnie Gorgeous Basciano, who was very good in the bookmaking business and ultimately took over some bookmaking businesses. He was the same as Migliore. Migliore was a smart kid. He was an adept kid, and he was very impressive. By the age of 21, Migliore would be arrested 10 different times, but he never did any jail time. And what do we know about this, Blackjack, with these mobsters that were their high ups in the, by the 50s and 60s? Due to them not being treated like gangsters in their kind of their younger years, where maybe they should have been sent to jail, maybe they would have learned something like a Carmen Persico or Tony Ducks or Carmen Galanti, the criminal justice system doesn't really do much. And, they're able to climb the ladder, and it's no surprise they become high-end gangsters.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's learned behavior, right? I mean, in any aspect of life, if you do something over and over and you keep getting away with it, well, what the hell's going to stop you from doing it over and over again? It's just going to continue.
Exactly. But it was interesting though, because, not only was he being arrested, a lot of it was minor stuff, and he was making a lot of money. He was impressing the right people and will climb the ladder. It was alleged by, the mid 50s, Neil Migliore in his 20s was making tens of thousands of dollars a week through bookmaking and through numbers. And this is, again, it's no surprise when some of these people get into this life because, as we talk about time and time and time and time again, these areas are full of immigrants. They're full of people that struggle. You give some money to some kids. And remember, Blackjack, the bookmaking and numbers business is not a, for the most part, violent business, is it? It's a business that, you know, it's relatively inconspicuous. No one's really a victim, to be frank. And you can make a ton of money out of it. So it doesn't surprise me that Migliore was drawn to this life. As we know, in 1957, Apalachin would happen. And we're not going to go into Apalachin. We all know what happened there. But interestingly enough, at, you know, 24, 25, it is alleged that Neil Migliore may have been at Apalachin. In fact, from the Lucchese crime family, some of the main people that were there, it's alleged that Tommy Lucchese was there, but there's also people that say he wasn't there because he was never ultimately hemmed up in anything. The representatives from the Lucchese family were Vincent Reo, Big John Armento, and Joe Rosato. Now, what's interesting about this is Migliore's car license plate was actually ID'd after it was involved with in an accident the next day. Now, it is possible, Blackjack, that Neil Migliore's mentor, Joe Narrows Laratro, was actually someone that used his car to go to the meeting alongside Joe Brown Lucchese, who was Tommy's brother. He was allegedly there, though, and that would make him the youngest person to be at Apalachin. Now, by this point, Migliore is 25. He's a driver for Laratro. But while he may have been there or may have not been there, the fact that he was involved with this in some way by giving even his car up, Blackjack, unwittingly, this is big for someone like Migliore. He's getting into the eyes of important people that were there. It's alleged also that the underboss of the family, Stefano LaSalle, was there. For a young kid of his age, that's a huge thing.
Yeah, man, it's a step up in responsibility. It's more visibility, as you said, and if you do a good job there, you know, you're going to get even more on your plate. So for somebody of his age and his station, this is a big opportunity.
It absolutely is. And that's exactly what it does for him. He, it gains respect for Migliore. He becomes one of these guys that can be talked about in the upper echelon of the mob. You know, and also what happens is he becomes very close with Tony Ducks Corallo. And when we did the Tony Ducks episode, this is what we talked about. One thing about the Lucchese crime family that I have to give major respect for, even in the 40s, when Tommy Lucchese becomes the capo di tutti capi of the Lucchese's, they have always been very adept at labor racketeering, really from Lucchese to Johnny Dio to Tony Ducks to all these different people. And this is where Migliore slots in with the right guy. Now, it's important to realize Corallo is about 20 years older than Migliore, but they become friends. He kind of slots in, and throughout Tony Ducks' life, really into his, you know, into the mid-80s when he gets arrested, Neil Migliore is basically his number two. And they became thicker's thieves. They became basically the Johnny Dio and Tommy Lucchese of the 60s, 70s, and 80s once kind of Lucchese gets out of the way. And while Migliore had all of his big bookmaking things and loan sharking things, this is where he starts to realize that labor racketeering construction is where it was. He would own a large marble business on Long Island. And it actually, weirdly enough, sold tombstones. I've always thought, Blackjack, you want to get into a racket, the funeral business, man. There's never going to be people that aren't dying, right?
Funerals and weddings, bro. Funerals and weddings.
And as someone, it's funny you say weddings, because I think, as you know, my family's in the wedding business. And my dad talks to me all the time about, you know, how many, you know, you can't believe what people spend on weddings. Yeah. And I think in the case of funerals, it's the same. You know, you want a nice casket, you want a nice procession, you want all that stuff. So Neil Migliore was involved in the marble business. He was also very involved in concrete. And this would be very important as we get in to the 60s and 70s, because concrete, what's more important to a skyscraper than concrete, Blackjack? Is there many things?
Maybe steel.
Right. Maybe steel. That's true. Migliore would become involved with a company called Northbury Concrete, which was a high-end Queens concrete company. And this would be integral in the skyscraper landscape and in kind of that picture of New York. And like I said, he still had his huge numbers business, and he was continuing to roll up kind of the mark of the mob in the upper echelon. And Blackjack, look, as we've said before, okay, sometimes you're either a killer, an earner. If you can be both, you're going to be a legend. I think what I've learned in the Lucchese family, though, most of them were, I mean, again, that changes when Anthony Casso, but for the most part, most of the people involved with labor racketeering were in the Lucchese's, and they became very powerful because of it. I've always said, you know, really into the 70s, I think you can make a strong case. The Lucchese crime family, really up until Corral or up until Casso, was one of the more powerful groups because they made it strictly through mostly labor racketeering.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, that's truthfully, that's the best way to be because it's the violence that generates all the headlines, right? The violence is what brings the attention. It's what gets things dirty and messy. If you can just get away with a labor racket the way they did, that's the way to do it, man.
Amen. By 1973, Stephen LaSalle, who was the underboss for a lot of years, would actually retire. And this is where Neil Migliore takes over. If we remember as underboss, if we remember when we did the Tony Ducks episode, Tony Ducks would actually take over really in 1967-ish. Tommy Brown Lucchese would die in 67. He ends up going to jail, Tony Ducks. They throw Carmine Tremonti in as kind of the acting boss until 73. Tremonti goes to jail in 73. Crowler comes out. He's made boss in 73. And he would have about a 13-year reign as the boss of the Lucchese crime family. He would institute his longtime friend, Neil Migliore, as the underboss. So, you know, Migliore by this point is a very happy man. He's making tons of money in construction. The Lucchese crime family is one of the more powerful in New York. And I'll be honest, Blackjack, I think I might get a lot of shit for this, but I think you make the case of the second most powerful family in New York during the 70s. I mean, the Genovese family was very powerful with Chin and Tony Salerno and into the late 70s. But I mean, these are three powerful groups, the Gambinos, the Lucchese's, and the Genovese. Tony Corrales in control. They both move at one point to Oyster Bay, Long Island. And it was actually alleged that Tony Ducks and Neil Migliore actually lived on the same street in Oyster Bay. Oyster Bay, very nice area. I think you're from Long Island, Blackjack. Tell us about Oyster Bay. Do you know anything about it?
Oyster Bay is, you know, it's the Gold Coast of Long Island. It's if you know the Great Gatsby, it's like that area. It's a lot of homes on the water, you know, on the North Shore of Long Island. It's incredibly expensive. It is some of the most expensive real estate in the country. It's very, very upper echelon.
Yeah, no, I agree. And look, Long Island's very nice. I mean, obviously it's more suburban. It's a good place to, you know, get your crimes done in Queens and the Brooklyn and all that stuff and head out to Long Island and rest your head. As I said, Neil Migliore is the main overseer of major contracts, particularly in concrete. And what it allowed was is for him to bid rig, you know, win contracts and siphon off a ton of money for the family. We saw this really throughout, you know, most of the families. I mean, Ralph Scopo was big in the Colombo crime family in doing this. Obviously, we know the Genovese family had Salerno and all these different people that were doing it for them. Gambinos, I mean, Sammy Gravano was integral in some of that stuff in construction for the Gambinos. It was said that through Migliore's effort, Blackjack, they were actually making multi-millions of dollars from contracts like Trump Plaza, Mount Sinai Medical Center, all these big projects. And what's interesting about the Lucchese's is really up until and after Corallo, Queso and Amuso were very involved with violence. But even after them, I mean, Stephen Creo, we talked about him. He was very involved with labor racketeering and union construction. This is something that the Lucchese's have always been very adept at. And one thing we can also contend with, Blackjack, out of all the things that have happened to Neil Migliore, making money, becoming an underboss, what was one thing he had not done at this point, by this point?
Kill someone?
Go to jail.
There you go.
As well. He really spent no time inside. Yeah. Now, the problem for Mr. Neil Migliore was that was not going to be forever. On March 21st, 1986, Neil Migliore is indicted alongside Tony Salerno, Vinny the Fish Cafaro, Vincent DiNapoli, Giuseppe Sabato, couple of other members of the Genovese crime family, a Gambino member, Alphonse Mosca, and some business associates on extortion and big rigging charges. Allegedly, Neil Migliore and other mobsters had rigged bidding processes for supplying of concrete to high-rise business projects such as Trump Plaza, Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and others. This was a big problem. Plus, you know, the New York Times, as they normally do, report that Neil Migliore was controlling gambling pretty much in large areas of Queens and was the underboss of the Lucchese crime family. So this was a big problem for him. Ultimately, he would be convicted, Neil Migliore, and get 24 years in federal prison. He'd also be fined almost $300,000. Now, here's what's good, though. Now, this was a big problem for Salerno, and Corallo would end up getting jammed up, and he would go to prison for a long period of time. In 1991, Neil Migliore's conviction is actually overturned, and he's released from prison. He would continue to hold a job as a sales rep at a concrete business, but you know, this doesn't happen often, Blackjack, where you know, your conviction gets overturned on an appeal. Do you have any percentages on how frequently that happens? Probably not much.
I don't have a percentage, Jeff, but I can tell you it's incredibly, incredibly rare. I mean, you either have to have new evidence, which is obviously very hard because evidence doesn't usually get discovered years after the fact, or you need to have really a severe prejudicial error by the court in the original trial. So it's really, really rare. It's, I mean, way less than 1% of convictions are overturned.
Right. Doesn't happen much. The problem, though, is there's a couple of years behind bars. So, you know, it's like 3 or 4 years behind bars. The Lucchese family goes from being a well-oiled machine that made a ton of money to a literal fucking shitstorm. And that's because Corallo goes away. Obviously, Neil Migliore goes away. Paul Vario had went away by this point. There's no leadership in this family. And this is one thing that, you know, these couple of years kind of destroyed the Lucchese crime family, because Casso's put in control. They start warring with you know, there's upheavals. There's all sorts of crazy shit that happens. Casso's a complete lunatic, as we know. And he becomes underboss, and Amuso is boss. And, you know, this is kind of signals the end, because what happens here is the Lucchese's are now a shit show. And, you know, when Migliore gets out, he doesn't really know where to go, because he's this part of the old school, and you know, he doesn't really know if he slots in. What would happen was Amuso kind of figures out that, okay, Neil's out. He's an old school guy, kind of like a Jimmy Brown failure in the Gambino family. John Gotti, I think, always kind of realized that Jimmy Brown, you know, had to be taken care of. You can't treat him like an asshole. You got to kind of butter his bread a little bit. Amuso decides, I'm not doing that. In fact, instead of doing that, I'm just going to have Neil Migliore killed. He's an old fuck at this point. I feel like he's thinking, I'm going to just get rid of him. So that's exactly kind of what happens here. On April 3rd, 1992, Neil Migliore is enjoying a birthday party for the 4-year-old granddaughter of a friend of his at a restaurant in Westbury, Long Island. He's seated at the front of the restaurant. Now, the restaurant obviously faces the street. There's a bit of a driveway. It's alleged that Migliore is sitting in the front kind of vestibule of the restaurant. At a certain point, an individual in dark colored clothing in a dark colored vehicle comes out and sprays the restaurant up. Now, remember, this is a 4-year-old's birthday party. Migliore is the only one hit. In fact, he was hit multiple times in multiple parts of his body, including his neck and torso. He's an old man at this point. 1992, he's born in 33. He's in his 60s. A shotgun blast hit not only him, but the wall beside him. And he's in critical condition at a hospital. While the wounds were severe, he would nonetheless survive and would actually make a full recovery. Now, actually, an interesting name in all this. It was alleged by certain people that you know, researched the mob. The individual that put this hit in motion was a person that they called Paul the Zip or Paul the Greaseball. Paul was a cocaine trafficker, an individual called Paolo LaDuca. True story. He was the individual that likely put this hit into motion and maybe contacted people from the other side to come over and take care of this. Now, I bring this up because obviously I have to bring it up, but it makes it funny because Blachick used to work with a guy called Paul LaDuca. Paul LaDuca was a longtime catcher for the Mets and the Dodgers. And I remember one time, I don't know if you remember this, Mike. Do you remember I asked you if Paul was related to Paolo LaDuca? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember you brought it up once.
So it's alleged that Miglior the hit was probably put in motion by Paolo LaDuca, weirdly enough. Not the Paul LaDuca you know, but...
Not Paul LaDuca, the baseball player.
The other one. So Neil makes a full recovery, but it's basically shown that these newer guys are not going to get in line and just butter the bread of these old school guys. And Miglior kind of realizes, hey, I'm fucking with people that I would really had to fuck with before. Because let's remember, for the most part, everything was good in Miglior's life. He had made a ton of money. He was powerful. It was laid back. And I'm sure he probably thought, damn, I wish Tony Corrado was still in charge of this family. He would, though, not have to really stay on the street for very long. After his full recovery, he would actually be sent back to prison as a result of an appeal being overturned. He would remain behind bars until 1997, Miglior, when he came out. The good thing for Miglior was it may have saved his life. Who knows? Amuso and Casso may have went at him again. But by this point in 97, Amuso and Casso are out of the way. And the family's now pretty much under control of a ruling body, if you will. And we kind of know all about that ruling body. It is kind of the group of people like Stephen Crea, Joe DiNapoli, Matty Madonna, those guys. Dominic Cuteo was under control at one point. So Miglior kind of slides right back in and kind of acts as your kind of old school counselor. He's not your consigliere by any means, but he was very respected by this point. The one thing that we can say about really everyone outside of Casso and Amuso, they respected the old school guys, Blachick. They respected the leadership that they presented. Neil Miglior can very much help you as opposed to hurt you. And it's interesting because Miglior is actually reinstalled in 2002 as the underboss of the Lucchese crime family. In 2006, he would step down and he retires due pretty much to old age. And he would continue to serve as a high-end old school guy. I'm sure he scaled back a lot of his stuff. And by 2010, he's pretty much out of the life. He's in his 80s at that point. There's nothing wrong with as an old school guy kind of retiring and saying, you know what? Yeah. I'm going to put myself in control, out of control, and let the young guys kind of take over.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's as dignified an end as you can have in that life, right? I mean, you know, you don't die in a jail cell, you know, you don't rat on your friends. You just kind of fade out gracefully. So, you know, I think that's the best you can hope for.
Yeah. In 2019, Neil Miglior would pass away at 85 years old. You know, from old age, he was an old guy by this point. But you know, these are the kind of guys I like to profile just because I think it's important. I mean, this is a guy that was pretty integral really from, you know, the mid 50s all the way until the 80s in really creating what the Lucchese family was. And at one point they were a very powerful triumvirate. I mean, back during these days in the 70s and stuff, the Bonanno family was a mess. Colombo crime family was in a mess at certain points. Gambino's had some issues with the Castellano to Gotti regime. At one point, the Lucchese's and Genovese family were the most powerful in the country, and they really controlled unions and construction. You know, some of the buildings we look at in New York today, people like Neil Miglior were very involved in. Trump Tower. Concrete was poured because of Neil Miglior at Trump Tower. It's that simple. And, you know, I think we forget a lot about, you know, these kind of guys. And this is one of the reasons we started this show. I mean, we're obviously going to talk about the big boys, but, you know, Neil Miglior must be talked about. He's someone that we should remember. And he's someone that was really important to the upper echelon of the Lucchese family for a long period of time. I do want to end this with kind of an interesting story. You know, really just months after the death of Neil Miglior, his name would actually resurface, but for all the wrong reasons. In 2019, an individual would be arrested called Americo Miglior. Now, Americo Miglior, who went by Ricky, is actually the grandson of Neil Miglior. He would be arrested After the feds would allege he would actually cop a plea after he was arrested for selling thousands of oxycodone pills between 2016 and 2019. The feds would kind of allege that he would make 10 different trips to the Dominican Republic over the last couple of years between 2016 and 2019 in the sights of the DEA. They'd be awaiting to arrest him. They would say in the memo that in addition to obtaining nearly 13,000 30 mil oxycodone pills with a street value of up to 300,000, Miglior would also attempt to ship the upper receiver of a 9mm Glock pistol and 6 loaded Glock 9 pistols to himself in the Dominican. That was the same day his ex-wife told him that she had received a text message that he had killed someone there with a Glock. He would say in a text message to his ex-wife with a picture of an individual he had claimed to bribe after he, quote, beat the murder charge. In the same series of messages, according to ganglandnews.com, he boasted to his wife, quote, I'm a fucking criminal, and that's what I'll always be. So this is kind of a weird kind of finish on the Miglior namesake, if you will. He'd end up getting, I think, 57 to 71 months in federal prison. And I think he's up to get out at the end of 2022. But, you know, we've seen this before, Blackjack, with some of the grandsons and sons of mobsters. We saw it with John Gotti. His grandson was pinched a couple of years ago with Gene Borello and Vinny Asaro. We've seen it with other members of the American Mafia, but kind of a wild story. Now, he was never ultimately brought to justice on that little thing he boasted about, but he definitely was very involved in the drug trade. Look, the drug trade is very profitable for people. And for people like this Miglior, I'm sure he used his stature as the grandson of Neil Miglior to do what he did. He would also claim that he had, quote, gotten away with murder in the Dominican Republic, but the prosecutors declined to comment on those comments that he made. Now, again, Blackjack, I guess it's not illegal to talk about murders you may have done. Now, they may look into them and not find anything, but I have heard in years past that just because you say something on wiretap does not quite mean you did it. Your lawyer could claim, well, he was just blowing off steam or something.
It's actually that way with any confession, even if you give it directly to police, there still needs to be substantiating evidence.
Right. This Miglior grandson would also give graphic detail of the murder in the text. Using the 40 caliber Glock, he would say, quote, I shot the victim from just 5 feet away. The guy's fucking stomach exploded like a fucking watermelon, he added. Now, again, the Dominican Republic is a totally different country to this one, but just kind of an interesting connection to the older Neil Miglior. Definitely an embarrassment a bit, if you will, to his grandfather. Look, I think we can all make the very solid claim that Neil Miglior was not a bad guy. I mean, he was a mobster. He wasn't a killer or anything. He wasn't jabbing people with ice picks or anything, but kind of a stain on the Miglior name, if you will, but a guy I felt like important to talk about. I mean, Black, you got to give some credit to a 67-year-old guy that survives a shotgun blast to the neck and torso. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
You really do. That's no joke. I mean, you really do.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And I mean, by the way, was there no better way to do that? You really had to do it at a 4-year-old's birthday party.
Yeah. I'm always fascinated by when people decide when they're going to hit someone. But again, I think, you know, it's important to remember that when you take a hit, and this has been talked about by people that have done this sort of thing, it's kind of on site. You know, when you see them, you know, and you have to answer for, okay, you saw the individual, why didn't you do anything? Your job is to kill him. And, you know, I guess it's hard to find some of these guys, and you know, you're not going to hit him at his house. You're not going to run up in his house or something. So yeah, I agree. And what's interesting about the mob, Blackjack, is I feel like the mob, if that were his grandkid, they wouldn't have done it. But it happened to be like his friend's grandkid, so they just said, well, fuck it, we'll do it. But yeah, you can't wait till he's like walking out to the car or something.
Right.
That might be a little bit better. But yeah, that could have been really fucking bad. I mean, I've talked about on YouTube, innocent people killed by the mob. That could have been really bad. You're shooting into to a restaurant, kind of crazy. But there you go. Neil Miglior on the sit down. As always, please go follow us on Twitter at the Sit Down Seven, at the Sit Down Seven. Also, go check us out on YouTube. Just search the Sit Down, a Mafia History podcast. Not only do you get shows weekly on this channel that you're listening to right now, but I put up some extra videos there each week as well. Please go check that out. I think you'll enjoy it. If you like our content here, you'll like it there. Blackjack, I was curious at your thoughts. Did you listen to the Judge Gleason interview?
I did, yes. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, I want to just say this one more time. I want to thank the judge for coming on. As I've told all of you, I'm sure people have, go out and buy the book, The Gotti Wars. Very interesting. Definitely gives you a kind of an interesting glimpse into kind of the other side. You know, we hear all the time from informants or even gangsters themselves, news reporters, stuff like that. But it's rare you really hear the in-depth stuff from the judges and the people that prosecute these folks.
Yeah, it is. It's always fun and interesting to get the perspectives of those involved. And I thought you did a great job asking the questions that, you know, we want to know the answers to. So I thought it was a great interview, and anyone who hasn't heard it should go listen to it.
I appreciate it. And it's good to have you back, man. We'll have to kind of keep it going here on the show. Next week, we'll be back with another great episode. You know, maybe at one point we'll let Blackjack pick the person. Do you have anyone you want to talk about, Blackjack? Who are we talking about?
I'm sure I do. I'd have to really sit down and think about it, though, because I want to come up with someone good.
You got about a week to think about it. So figure that out and let us know. Blackjack, you do have an announcement about your Twitter, right? Let us know what happened.
Yeah, I got my old Twitter account back. The one that had all the followers on it. So make sure you go and give me a follow at Blackjack Fletch. It's a lot easier at Blackjack Fletch. That's where I am now. It's where everything comes out of. So pop on over there.
At Blackjack Fletch. You can follow me at Jeff Nadeau, and go follow us at the Sit Down Seven on Twitter. Blackjack, good to hear from you. It's always nice to have you here. I hope everyone enjoyed the show on Neil Miglior. We will be back next week with another great episode of the Sit Down. As I always say, if you hear ads on this show, you know, go check them out. I did. We're actually in some partnerships. I'm in a partnership with some companies, a company called Athletic Greens. Go check that out. I've been taking some of their supplements. They're really good. They're really high end. Go check them out. I'm sure you guys hear me talking about that on the episode. So go check that out and go support our Twitters, YouTubes, all that stuff. Keep growing the show. Tell your friends, tell your family. I get people every day. Blackjack, real quick before we go, I got a text the other day. I'm not going to say who it was, but someone reached out to me and they said, hey, my mother, she's in her 80s. She loves your show. So that's what she told me. He told me. And I said, that's so great. I said, you know, who is she? And he told me, he said, can you do me a favor? I said, yes. He goes, can you send me a message wishing her happy birthday? And I said, abso-fucking-lutely. So I don't remember exactly when her birthday is, but if she is the person that I did send that to, she knows who she is. I want to wish her again a very happy birthday. Those kind of messages are dope to get. Yeah. They're awesome to receive because, you know, you get people all the time. Hey, my family likes this, or my dad likes this. We kind of catered, I think, to a wide audience just because I think it doesn't matter how old you
really
are. Yeah. Like I've heard people that are 20 listen to this show, and I've heard people that are 80 that listen to this show. So, you know, if you have someone that you think might enjoy this show, the easiest way to help us is to tell them about it, because the more they listen, the better it is for us and for all of us. So please do that. Thanks to Blackjack for coming out. Wow. We're getting crazy news as this show ends, Blackjack. I'm seeing a report that the rapper Young Thug has been indicted in a 56 count indictment. We don't talk about rappers much. We'll see if this is a federal case. Maybe we'll talk about it next week. Pretty interesting. Blackjack, wild, a lot of stuff going on. Thank you for listening. Thank you for checking out the show. Blackjack, we'll see you next week. Thanks for being here.